Imagine waking up in a high-end luxury boutique hotel room. You grab an artisanal pour-over coffee. You walk maybe 20 feet down a stylized corridor.
Right, a fully soundproofed corridor.
Exactly, soundproof. You open these double doors and step directly onto a heavy industrial fabrication floor.
Just right there.
Right there, yeah, to calibrate a multi-million-dollar robotics drill. I mean, it sounds like a complete
It
contradiction.
really does.
But welcome to the newest, weirdest, and potentially most profitable asset class in commercial real estate.
Yeah, it is a profound structural shift. I mean, if you are an institutional investor or, a capital allocator navigating the current market,
Which is tough right now.
extremely tough. The standard playbooks for commercial real estate and hospitality are facing immense pressure. So the search for reliable margin expansion has required looking, well, way beyond traditional asset classes. And really, that is the objective of our deep dive today.
Spot on. So we are unpacking the latest Pry's Perspective newsletter by Priyanshu Adathokar, known across the industry simply as Pry.
The benchmark, honestly.
Exactly. As a top-tier commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor, Pry's insights consistently serve as the benchmark for where institutional capital is going to flow next.
Yeah, you have to pay attention to where he's looking.
For sure. And his core thesis in this week's brief introduces this massive tension in the market. Basically, the traditional boundaries between industrial utility and professional hospitality are rapidly, violently blurring.
And we're not talking about like standard mixed-use developments here.
Right, not your typical coffee shop downstairs, apartments upstairs kind of deal.
No, not at all. Pry argues this blurring is giving rise to a highly specialized, entirely new asset class, one that forces heavy fabrication and boutique lodging into a single, high-yield, hybrid asset.
Which he calls.
He calls it the infill industrial maker retreat.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the macro theory sounds fascinating, but let's be real for a second. If you are managing a traditional real estate portfolio right now, you are probably rolling your eyes at the idea of mixing heavy machinery with a place where people sleep.
Oh, absolutely. It sounds insane at first glance.
Right, because we have spent the last 50 years moving factories out of urban centers specifically because of noise, emissions, logistics. So why on earth are we bringing manufacturing back into tight urban infill spaces?
Well, that is the pivotal question. And to understand it, we really have to look at the macroeconomic drivers that Pry outlines in his brief. This is fundamentally driven by massive nearshoring initiatives, like the fragility of global supply chains over the past few years just completely broke the traditional prototype to production pipeline.
Broke it entirely.
Yeah, corporate tech and hardware entities realize they just can no longer afford the 6 to 8 month lag times associated with waiting for overseas fabrication.
Because speed is everything now.
Exactly. I mean, if you are developing a new drone or like a proprietary robotics component, sending CAD files to Shenzhen and waiting weeks for a physical iteration to be shipped back, that is a death sentence for your go-to-market strategy today.
So they need it locally? But wait, manufacturing in an urban infill? I mean, how are they fitting heavy fabrication into, say, a 50,000 square foot warehouse in downtown Austin or Denver?
Right. Well, because this isn't the heavy smokestack manufacturing of the 20th century. It is precision high-tech manufacturing. And as Pry points out, bringing this highly specialized production into urban infill locations, it solves that speed-to-market issue without requiring massive, sprawling suburban footprints.
I see.
But these visiting engineering and tech teams, they require a highly specific environment to execute these intense short-term sprints.
So from an asset management perspective, is this effectively treating industrial real estate the way the market treated dormant office spaces a decade ago?
And I mean,
Well, transforming a low-yield liability like an outdated, functionally obsolete urban warehouse into a high-yield hybrid asset, much like the rise of specialized data centers that repurposed old telecom buildings.
that's a great way to look at it. The analogy holds up well, but with a massive caveat.
Okay, what's the caveat?
Dormant offices didn't require industrial-grade power grids or floor load capacities designed for forklifts.
Right, fair point.
The true paradigm shift here, as Pry explicitly notes in his brief, is treating the industrial property not just as a space to store goods, but as a dynamic environment to build them.
Actively build them,
Exactly. Traditionally, infill industrial was viewed purely through the lens of logistics, the last mile distribution center.
Gagging boxes to doors.
Right. But the maker retreat model shifts the value proposition from passive storage to active creation. So you take a raw shell with robust utility infrastructure, and you layer on a highly specialized operational business.
Okay, so the macro narrative makes perfect sense on paper. Supply chains are fragile. Production needs to be local. Speed is everything.
Yeah.
But if you are managing institutional capital, macro theories don't pay out quarterly distributions.
They certainly don't.
So why would a developer take on the massive headache of blending these two distinct worlds instead of just, you know, buying another stable, predictable multifamily complex? Let's look at the actual math pry highlights.
And the math is where this transitions from just a niche concept to a major institutional target. Pry highlights a notable 14% uptick in industrial leasing specifically fueled by this localized production demand.
14% is huge.
It is. And that 14% is concentrated demand from a very specific, highly capitalized tenant profile.
Right. We were talking about well-funded hardware teams, aerospace startups, corporate R&D divisions.
Exactly. And developers are capturing exceptionally high margin revenue by pivoting smaller infill properties toward them.
Because they have the budget.
They do. These corporate groups require intensive short-term sprints. Like, they will fly a team of 8 elite engineers into a city to develop a physical product, test it, iterate, and finalize the prototype in, say, 90 days.
But if I am looking at my hospitality portfolio, my primary performance metric is RevPAR, revenue per available room. That is how traditional hotel operators live and die.
Sure.
Are hospitality investors missing a massive blind spot here by ignoring industrial zoned infill? Or is this just too niche to move the needle for a major fund?
Honestly, if a hospitality investor is only looking at RevPAR, they're entirely missing the revenue generated by the industrial component of this hybrid model.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, Pri's analysis suggests this is a massive blind spot that early movers are heavily exploiting right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it from the corporate client's perspective. Historically, they would rent a block of downtown hotel rooms for 3 months.
Right.
And then sign a short-term lease on a suburban warehouse or a makerspace miles away to do the actual building.
Which means they lose hours every single day just commuting between the hotel and the industrial park.
Exactly. Furthermore, they are paying two separate premiums to two different landlords.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So the make or retreat model captures both of those budgets. You are effectively capturing a corporate client's massive lodging budget and their R&D facility budget simultaneously under one roof.
So the combined revenue per square foot completely alters the yield profile compared to a standalone hotel or a standalone warehouse.
It completely blows it out of the water.
Here is where it gets really interesting on the balance sheet. Because we aren't just underwriting real estate anymore, we are essentially underwriting R&D as a service bundled with boutique lodging.
That's exactly what it is.
And according to Pry's newsletter, there is a structural tailwind driving the financials right now that makes the return on investment incredibly aggressive. We need to talk about the tax policy.
Yes. The strategic intersection of real estate demand and tax policy is perhaps the most compelling catalyst for institutional capital right now.
It's massive.
Small-scale urban industrial sites are perfectly sized for this boutique fabrication. But the crucial financial lever, as Pri points out, is the 100% bonus depreciation on technical equipment.
Let's run the numbers on that, because for an investor, understanding how that changes the year one cash flow is critical. Walk me through how this actually functions.
Okay, so let's say you acquire a warehouse and spend $5 million outfitting the fabrication floor with high-end machinery.
Okay.
The current tax code allows owners investing in that technical equipment to take a massive immediate tax advantage. You can effectively write off that entire $5 million capital expenditure against your taxes in year one.
Wait, all of it in year one?
All of it.
So you are sheltering the high margin revenue generated by the lodging side of the business with the accelerated depreciation of the industrial assets.
Exactly. It creates an incredibly efficient capital stack. You have real estate appreciation on the underlying infill asset, high margin short-term rental income from the corporate tenant, and this massive tax shield from the equipment depreciation.
That is wild. And to understand why that equipment costs $5 million in the first place, we need to zoom in on the physical space itself.
Yes, we do.
Pry describes the Maker Suite as the absolute heart of this model. And we need to be crystal clear for anyone trying to underwrite this. These are not just, you know, wood shops with a few bandsaws and a 3D printer.
No, not even close. These are pristine precision environments. The capital expenditure is going toward things like multi-axis CNC machines.
Right. And for those not living in the manufacturing world, a multi-axis CNC machine is essentially a massive automated computer-guided carving machine.
It is a beast of a machine.
Yeah, it can take a solid block of aerospace-grade titanium and mill it into a complex functional engine component in a matter of hours.
Which requires massive power draw, heavy concrete slab foundations, and pristine calibration.
And sitting directly adjacent to that heavy industrial core are the residential components.
Right, the contrast is crazy.
Yeah. Prey notes, these are compact, high-design residential pods. They offer the luxury amenities of a boutique hotel, high-end espresso machines, biometric security, soundproofed sleep pods.
Because they are optimized for a demographic that has rapidly evolved over the last few years.
Right, because the software engineers of the last decade could do their work from a laptop in a coffee shop?
Exactly. But the hardware, robotics, and aerospace engineers of this decade need to be hands-on with physical products.
You have to physically build the thing.
Right. They need a pristine, high-design environment to sleep, shower, and hold digital meetings with their executives, seamlessly connected to a heavy power fabrication floor where the physical prototype is actually being milled.
Okay, I love the vision, but underwriting a hybrid model like this has to come with severe friction.
Oh, it does.
If you're an investor listening to this, you're probably wondering what the catch is. And as Prey outlines, the hurdles on the other side of this trade are steep. Let's talk about the zoning complexities, because municipal codes are just not set up for this.
What's fascinating here is that the zoning complexities alone are formidable. I mean, historically, urban planning has been dedicated to keeping industrial activity and residential activity as far apart as possible.
Right. You have M1 or M2 zoning codes, which are strictly designated for light or heavy industrial use, manufacturing, warehousing, places with high noise levels, heavy truck traffic, potential emissions.
Exactly.
And on the other side of town, you have residential or commercial hospitality zones.
So if you are a developer executing a maker retreat, you are asking a municipality to allow people to sleep in an M1 industrial zone,
which they hate.
Or, conversely, you're asking a city council to allow a titanium milling CNC machine inside a commercial hospitality zone.
Good luck getting a city inspector to approve a space where a robotics engineer is sleeping 30 feet away from a machine capable of cutting through solid steel.
Yeah, it's not an easy conversation.
The permitting process alone sounds like a multi-year battle.
The entitlement risk is significant, without a doubt. It requires a sophisticated developer who knows how to navigate variances and conditional use permits.
For sure.
But beyond the municipal red tape, there is a massive operational risk. As Pregainer rightly points out in his brief, the specialized nature of the equipment requires an entirely different breed of management team.
You cannot just hire a standard hotel general manager from a Marriott to run a maker retreat.
Not at all. The management team must be capable of maintaining, repairing, and calibrating complex industrial machinery while simultaneously managing high-end guest turnover, cleaning services, and hospitality amenities.
It is a major departure from traditional property management.
It really is.
So structurally, how do funds even handle that?
Well, it generally requires separating the underlying real estate from the business operation.
Okay.
You have a property company, the PropCo, that owns the dirt in the building. And sitting on top of that, you have a highly specialized operating company, the OpCo, that actually manages the hybrid hospitality and industrial business.
Which is why Prey's boots-on-the-ground approach regarding what to watch is so critical for capital allocators. He stresses that the viability of these projects relies heavily on adaptive reuse in very specific markets.
Right, you can't just drop this into any random suburb.
No. We are looking at secondary tech hubs where industrial inventory is still available near urban cores.
Places like Austin, Raleigh-Durham, Denver, or the outskirts of Seattle.
Places with talent.
Exactly. These are locations where top-tier tech talent actually wants to live and spend 3 months, but where an investor can still acquire legacy industrial product, like an old bottling plant or a defunct distribution center, at a viable cost basis.
And according to Prey's brief, the ultimate metric of success for these operations is their plug-and-play nature.
Yes.
The speed at which a corporate team can move in, execute a complex hardware project, and move out is what dictates the massive premium you can charge.
That speed is everything.
If the CNC equipment isn't calibrated perfectly when the team arrives, or the lodging lacks high-speed fiber internet, the entire financial model just breaks down.
The operational intensity cannot be overstated. But, you know, that barrier to entry is exactly what protects the margins for the institutional investors who figure it out first.
Right. So what does this all mean for the bottom line?
Well,
synthesizing these operational hurdles with the undeniable tax and revenue benefits leads us to a definitive investment verdict.
Yeah.
Infill industrial maker retreats represent a high utility evolution of the industrial sector. They are capitalizing on real leasing momentum driven by a broken global supply chain, and they are leveraging specific tax incentives to provide the physical infrastructure necessary for domestic innovation.
And to deliver Prey's final definitive perspective on this, we are witnessing the fundamental evolution of infill properties.
Yeah.
For decades, they were last mile delivery centers focused solely on consumption, you know, getting a package to a consumer's door as fast as possible.
Right, passive consumption.
But now they are transitioning into first mile centers for creation. As Pranju Adathakar concludes in his advisory, investors who can navigate the operational intensity of these hybrid assets will find themselves at the forefront of a highly resilient and specialized market.
Absolutely.
His guidance just continues to be vital for navigating these complex, multidisciplinary investments.
It fundamentally rewrites the underwriting standards we have relied on for decades.
It truly does.
Which leaves us with a final consideration as you look at your own capital allocation strategies moving forward. If elite corporate tech teams can now live, work, and manufacture physical prototypes in a single adaptive reuse infill space, will the next generation of institutional hospitality investors eventually need to underwrite heavy industrial capacity just to remain competitive in the corporate offsite market?